This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Thursday, 18th of November, 2021. We have a very weak euro in the FX space, a very indifferent sort of market action as we're poised near all-time highs. A little bit weaker markets out in Asia doesn't seem to be affecting the U.S. futures, though, if we look at where we are in the U.S. markets overnight here. But just want to briefly highlight before we get into the market action and what's going on, I will be hosting a FX market update webinar today at 1 o'clock CET. You can sign up for that on webinars.saxo. Just type webinars.saxo into your browser and the right URL come up. You can sign up and that allows you to, of course, join live and ask any questions you may have as well as seeing the presentation. And about a day later, we have the recording available on the same page down towards the bottom. So for those that are unable to attend live. Okay, so yeah, Peter, we have these 4,700 areas for whatever reason developed as the resistance zone in the S&P 500. I think it's a bit more interesting rather than the broader market, though, to look at some of the internals and some of the things we talked about this morning. So what are you pulling out of what's happening across the market here?
Yeah, well, as you can see on slide three, there are big divergences this month. You know, we have payments and biotech stocks rock bottom, down 5% and 8%, and you have semiconductors and crypto the other way around. So there's a huge divergence inside the equity market. But as you correctly point out, it's treading water here, I would say, and you still have this battle going on between whether inflation is transitory or more permanent. I think everyone that listens to our podcast will know what side we're leaning towards. I think it's all what's happening right now in the market is that as soon as we get to this, you know, critical point of mass or mass point, the inflection point, where enough believe that this is not transitory, then you'll see a big move in interest rates, and then you'll see a big repricing in equities. So I it's still the key risk for equities at this point.
Yeah, it's really important to underline. And we were talking about this morning that, you know, we've talked about the need for caution that you know, proved a little bit prescient back in the sort of September and into early October timeframe, where we are with valuations and so on. And of course, the narrative has developed with these very highly, as you indicate on the yield front, very highly negative real yields, that this provides the sort of the logic, the narrative for driving equities to sort of ever higher. So even if nominals go up a bit, as long as those, you know, inflation is seen as going even higher still, and you know, equities can go on as long as they want to. But we're very cautious and encourage folks to look for ways to hedge in this market, take some risk off. This is not natural what's going on. We mentioned just as a microcosm of this, the Rivian stock the day before yesterday, and it's crazy, 15% gain, all that actually, and then some was erased yesterday. Not to say that it's, you know, the canary in the coal mine necessarily, Rivian, just there's some crazy things going on in this market. And we're very cautious here. But anyway, back to the some key things happening and some really interesting news we got yesterday. We were talking about that this morning with these with Visa.
Yeah, because you know, Visa and MasterCard shares were down pretty heavily yesterday. MasterCard shares have recovered a little bit because what happened is that Amazon was quite publicly going out saying that we from very soon, I think maybe after the Christmas season, customers in the UK can't pay with Visa on Amazon's websites, and that's a big blow to Visa. The argument is, according to Amazon, is that they charge too much, and now, matter of fact, within the last 24 hours, have come out that, you know, Amazon is working very closely with MasterCard to potentially create a new co-branded partnership. Maybe they have been offered lower fees, I don't know. But as you said, John, because we talked about Visa, you can't say it's a simple service to do payments, because it is technically a quite complex at a massive scale globally, et cetera. But I mean, I've put it on slide four. Look at the financials of Visa. The company's running rock steady, a net profit margin somewhere between 52 and 53%. And when I told you that, John, you said, geez, man, in these times, can you actually have this high profit margin without being, you know, the center focus either of regulation or at least big attacks from big players like Amazon? And I think it is worth reflecting whether we potentially are moving into a new era of payments with a lot more competition and much lower fees, because 53%, not even Microsoft, the biggest natural monopoly in the world, can compete with those net profit margins.
Yeah, and for people in the US, you don't realize it's all behind the scenes, the massive fees that they charge, they go to the merchant. Of course, if you're a merchant in the US, you're familiar with this. And But the client doesn't realize this, or the customer doesn't realize this. If you try to pay with a credit card in Denmark, often you'll be charged extra for doing so. And I think even Amazon mentioned that they're putting small fees on card payments. I wasn't sure it was just Visa or just credit card payments in general. And I think it was Singapore and Australia, something they've done recently. With the technologies available today, other payment systems that are developing, I suspect those margins could come under pressure. Something to think about for the longer term, which have been superstar stocks, superstar companies in terms of their profitability. Enough of that. We need to get back to other issues. And one of the key issues, once again, in Europe with the natural gas, the huge big new rise we saw in the last couple of sessions with this news that the German regulator is pausing its certification process for Nord Stream 2. It's just, it's going from bad to worse here in terms of the scenarios if we don't get some serious gas flowing through these pipelines.
Yeah, you can't help but wondering. It seems very political at this point. Russia, Europe, and then Germany. I think there is a very interesting triangle going on right there. But I think the most interesting one was is this chart you see on slide 5. You see it to the left. It's Bloomberg's new energy finance. It's their subdivision doing energy research. They took the previous 30 winters in Europe, and they looked at the drawdown profiles on natural gas inventories and storage. And basically, as you can see here, I mean, is it 3 or 4 winters where you actually go below zero? So basically, if we get a very harsh winter in Europe, we are very much in trouble in Europe.
And there is no such thing as below zero, by the way.
No.
That's pipeline to have a, you have to have a certain pressure in the pipeline, which is way above that level. So it's basically saying there's significant risk if the drawdown.
Basically from a tail risk perspective, we are running a huge deficit on our inventories. And as you said, I think that was the guy that tweeted this, said that Bloomberg had said that around 10 billion cubic meters would be the minimum level to have pressure in the pipes. So this is very interesting. And I put in the Dutch natural gas forward, 1 month forward price here to the right. I mean, this is just an energy crisis is not a good thing either for the economy or companies, so that you have to have this on your radar.
Yeah. And it's hitting the euro as well, because you have both those prices affecting the economic outlook, pressuring the euro from that angle. And you have the ECB, which the market is sort of recalling back towards the anticipation of the ECB shifting to QE and this divergence in policy in Europe relative to the rest of the world, where we're all talking about rate hikes and when they're going to be priced. And so it's moving not just into euro dollar, it's moving into euro yen to a degree, but also euro sterling, especially after this week's data out of the UK and a couple of Bank of England comments. And you can see on slide 6 that euro sterling rate now down to cycle lows. And we're basically about a figure away from the post-Brexit vote lows, which are around 82.70. So interesting to see this big turnaround and just the isolated weakness in the euro. I'm not sure what really can change the sentiment there. It certainly doesn't look like it's going to be the ECB. It would have to come from positioning or something magically clearing in this whole natural gas situation and a big sentiment shift on that or something. But one thing where we're not seeing a good sentiment towards is longer-term German debt. Alcia, you're patiently waiting, I hope patiently at least, waiting down the line as we looked at a very weak auction out of Germany yesterday. Take us through what happened there.
Yeah, John, I think that we can talk about a technical failure for the 30 years bond issues from the German DMO yesterday. The thing is that the DMO was looking to issue 1 billion euro worth of the 30-year bonds, and it had to cut the issue size by more than 30% in order to increase oversubscription. And even by doing so, the bid to cover ratio fell to 1.1 times, which is the lowest since February 2020. So the big takeaway here is that it's becoming more obvious that investors are reluctant to take on duration risk amid a strong inflationary environment, and especially if central banks are going to become less accommodative. So definitely, this is another sign that yields are meant to rise.
Yeah, and basically ECB being at some point the sole buyer if that kind of dynamic keeps up there. All right, let's look at one very key story, few of us out there trading this, but it's just worth watching. It's the incredible devaluation in the Turkish lira. We have a central bank meeting today where the central bank there is expected to cut another 100 basis points on top of the 300 basis points they've cut already. You can see the dollar Turkish lira chart on slide 8, and we've had a really sharp devaluation this week, and especially accelerating yesterday with President Erdogan of Turkey out railing against interests, basically charging interest at all, even invoking religious language and the use of interest rates and so-called usury in his comments. Basically, I put a quote in today's quick take that he's basically against interest. So the market is very much for interest and does not like this rhetoric, to say the least. We've seen quite a devaluation there from the below 7, sort of 25, 750 area and below that, all the way till almost as high as 11 overnight. So this is risking becoming destabilizing. I would say it eventually at some level could affect European banks as well, who have significant exposures into Turkey. And then in the FX space, we still have a relatively firm dollar, but it's not the, the chief story here, I would say, relative to the euro weakness. I put a question mark in yesterday's podcast, if you care to have a re-listen to that, on whether the Swedish krona is fairly being painted with the same brush and even worse. As the euro weakens, I would argue it's a little bit unfair, but we need to see some Swedish krona buying coming in. And it does fit the narrative of past cycles, that that move. But it's just, I don't know if the narrative or if the past cycles are going to prove correct for this time around. We could see be seeing the ECB making a policy mistake that the Riksbank does not make. Anyway, yesterday with although we did see weak demand for German debt, we saw decent demand for U.S. debt, and that helped U.S. longer yields back lower a bit with that support, and that kept dollar yen away from this 115 level, which looks suspiciously like it's being played as a barrier. There could be options structures that get knocked in and knocked out around that level. So there could be significant fights around that level. It's really a level that hasn't traded since early 2017, and we've seen a bunch of attempts back then and in 2018, and then recently that have not been able to take out this resistance. So it's a massive resistance line. I would argue to get above 115 and get some sailing, clear sailing towards 120, you would have to see the long end of the U.S. yield curve coming a bit more unanchored and higher yields. And on that front, I'll tell you, yesterday was not the day for that to happen because of that 20-year auction hitting a different note than what we saw in the week 10 and 30 years. So what's going on there?
Yeah, John, actually it was quite surprising to see the market standing still with the 20-year auction. The 20-year auction wasn't as bad as expected, but it was still bad because the yield tailed 1.4 basis points. It was less than the previous auction, which tailed the 2.5 basis point, but it still tailed. And the bid to cover, although it was in line with the previous 6 auction, indirect bidders were slightly lower. So definitely what we have seen yesterday was not a great 20-year auction, but it was enough to keep the bond market and the long part of the yield stable. And I really thought about what really happened there, what is providing support to this part of the yield curve, especially because the 20 years tenor is pretty much unliked. And I found only 2 reasons. The first reason is that the Treasury cut issuance of the 20 years bond sales, but the Federal Reserve kept purchases between 10 years and 22 years unchanged. So definitely that provided support for this auction. And another reason is actually on slide number 10, is that the butterfly between 10, 20 and 30 years U.S. Treasury yields has cheapened a lot in the past few days after the 30 years auction. To levels that we have seen during summer. So probably what happened is that tail of 1.4 basis points was just enough to make a compelling case for investors to buy the 20 years within that butterfly strategy. But the big point here is, are we going to see the long part of the yield curve remaining stable in the long term? Because what happened is that yesterday after the auction, the 10 years yields fell again below level that we talked about, 1.6%. So it looks like now the bond market is a little bit setting back their rise in yields. But in reality, I think that the uptrend still remains. If we look at the MOVE index, which measures the fears in bond market, that is still elevated, despite yesterday we have seen yields retracing and also break-even rates retracing slightly. So definitely the big takeaway is that the bond market is still on hedge and yields can resume their rise.
All right, let's see what happens next. And especially, I'm curious, I'm not so sure it's going to happen out the long end of the curve, what happens around this Fed nomination, which is sort of hanging over the market. So yesterday I brought into the conversation or highlighted that NVIDIA is reporting and noted its valuation, Peter, at I think it was 34 times sales or whatever the rate was yesterday before this report. Just an incredible valuation. And then that massive steep acceleration we've seen since this idea has come about that they're going to help to drive the graphics needed to for people to join into this whole metaverse. I would call it a dystopia. I don't know. Other people may have a different description for that. But what came out of NVIDIA's earnings?
Sorry. Yeah, on slide 11, we have the stocks to watch today. I'll concentrate on NVIDIA and C Limited. But if we start with NVIDIA, so the earnings were just showing blistering growth in Q3. They were beating expectations, and the revenue guidance for Q4 was significantly above consensus. And when you have a company that have a pretty high return on invested capital, so the amount of incremental increase in net working capital and capital expenditures needed to drive extra additional sales, when that's low and you have these margins as NVIDIA has, then when you exceed your sales growth, you unlock a lot of shareholder value, because what they're doing is that they're constantly curing a higher sales growth rate than what is baked in the discounted value of the company. So what analysts are expecting, and that, as long as that's the case, it will continue to fuel this company to even higher market values. And I recently talked to Bloomberg and said I think NVIDIA is the next $1 trillion company. It is probably the best pure expression an investor can make on machine learning, data centers, any AI application, self-driving cars if they ever will come to our world, but all of these things will require the software and the computer chips that NVIDIA delivers. And then of course it is their chips as well that are used for crypto mining. So as long as we're seeing the crypto industry developing as it is right now, that will also support a company like NVIDIA.
That's not been supported for the last few days, at least. That's been a drag, I guess.
Absolutely correct. C Limited is the reason I mentioned that company is because it's very much traded by Saxo clients and a lot of retail investors. It's a hyper growth stock in gaming and e-commerce in the Southeast Asia region. They have expanded also to South America. They raised for the second time this year the fiscal year outlook on revenue, but their Q3 operating income was way worse than expected. The market was actually expecting that they would crank out a profit, but they remained heavily in a loss on the operating side, and I think that really spooked investors, because I mean, if you close to $9 billion in revenue and you're growing like this, why are you not pushing more to get just slightly above break even? I mean, there's just something there that doesn't really connect. So we have that in focus. Earnings Watch, slide 12. You can see which companies are reporting. I've singled out today Palo Alto, and that's because the cybersecurity industry has been on a tear lately, and they have done extremely well. It seems like the entire industry is just reporting across the board much higher revenue growth rates than consensus estimates. So it just shows you that they're shifting gear. And that's why we're seeing this massive repricing. And I'm really curious to see Palo Alto reporting today.
Palo Alto in the heart of Silicon Valley. All right, let's have a look at today's macro calendar. As mentioned already, the Turkish Central Bank meeting, it's all on slide 13, by the way. We're waiting imminently, I suspect, before next Monday, we're going to get this Fed chair nomination news. I have no idea how the market plays this. I think there's a considerable interest in a Brainard nomination, but there's the hearing process for that. And some people would say, well, if she can't get approved, then it would be somebody potentially more hawkish. So the irony could be endless if she's nominated and we end up somehow with somebody more hawkish rather than less hawkish. And I don't think she's less hawkish more dovish, I should say, than Powell is. South African rate announcement as well. No time given. They're expected to hike 25 basis points and the various other bits and pieces. out of the U.S. with the Philly Fed survey, the latest natural gas storage change in the U.S., if you're watching the natural gas market there, and a couple of Fed speakers tomorrow. I'm very intrigued, but we'll have to have a wrap on Monday for it, but just very intrigued at this what this Clarida speech is all about, talking about global monetary policy coordination. I find that a very interesting topic indeed. But that's it for today, and we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.